The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. When a plant that employs thousands of people goes dark, your first thought should be for those families.
Our government will always stand with our auto workers and do everything we can to support them in these difficult times.
Our government will stand shoulder to shoulder with them. We'll do whatever it takes to make sure they get back on their feet and they get proper training.
It's really about the workers and the impact it's having on them, their families, and the community as well.
But your second thought should be for the future. No company closes a plant because they want to lose money or be left behind by their industry. They do it because they see a profit in it, a competitive advantage, or at the very least, a shift in their industry that means they have to change too. So when General Motors announced the closing of their huge Oshawa, Ontario plant Monday, they offered a reason for it. GM believes that its future is in the automobile of tomorrow, and that the future is close enough that it can have this gigantic plant shuttered a year from now and come out ahead. Are they right? Is this a painful but necessary business decision that will usher GM into the next generation? Or is it a convenient excuse for corporate cost-cutting to boost stock prices? It depends on what the future of the car looks like. And it depends on how far away that future is. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Tim Demopoulos is an automotive specialist who covers the industry. Tim, what was the first thing that went through your head when you heard about these cuts?
Well, it wasn't entirely unexpected. I mean, the writing's been on the wall for the last little while. There was no announcement on future product over the last little while, and usually these things are planned out a couple of years, if not years, in advance. So the fact that we were coming into 2019 with no real forward visibility on what Oshawa was going to be doing was a bit of a signal, I suppose. The other part of it, too, is that there's been, for the last few months, voluntary buyouts at GM and a hiring freeze at Oshawa.
So, never good signs.
Yeah, never good signs. So, and there's been talk for the longest time that this plant would have been shut down. It's small, comparatively speaking, to other plants in the GM portfolio, and it's also small compared to other plants from other manufacturers in Ontario.
But it's not small to Oshawa.
No, it's not small to Oshawa.
Tell me about that plant and the city and how entwined they are.
Well, look, when you think about GM and Oshawa, it's very symbolic, right? GM has been a part of Oshawa since Oshawa has been a thing or a place. So you can't say Oshawa without thinking about GM. But it's more than just about assembly. I mean, there's also their Canadian corporate head offices are in Oshawa. There's no plans to move that facility out anytime soon. That employs several thousand employees. So GM still employs a lot of people in Oshawa, even in their engineering technical center. There's still that going on. So there might not be assembly or manufacturing going on, but there's still going to be a lot of know-how going into the automotive industry in that city.
The union's not taking this quietly, Obviously. What options do they have? What happens next for the next year?
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I think it's just bluster. I mean, the union can just sit there and say they're not going to take it anymore or they're going to fight this tooth and nail. But this is a decision that's been made, and it's bigger than just Oshawa. As everybody knows, the announcement that several plants in the United States will be closing, and two other plants in outside of North America are also slated for closure. They haven't been announced yet, but we're going to see more shutdowns. It's bigger than Oshawa at this point. So the unions can sit there and fight it all they want, but I think eventually they're going to have to accept it and get to work on trying to make sure their employees are retrained and redeployed in other areas, either in manufacturing or in other industries.
Well, speaking of that retraining, one of the reasons that General Motors gave for these series of cuts is to look towards the future of the car, I guess. So autonomous cars, self-driving cars, electric cars. What does that future look like, and are these workers a part of it?
Yeah, it's hard to say if these workers are a part of it. Because
how different is it from what they do now?
Yeah, it's different. I mean, the majority of the development that's taking place in this area is it's not necessarily engineering related. It's more software related. So So we only have to look a few kilometers north to Markham, where the GM Technical Center opened up about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago. And that is a hub of development when it comes to autonomous vehicles. And it's the employees are almost exclusively all software programmers and people who are involved in working on the back-end technology to get autonomous vehicles on the road. So there's a lot of activity in that sector. GM's also opening up a mobility hub on Eastern Avenue in a couple of years, which will focus on mobility and the future of mobility, whether it's ride sharing or even autonomous vehicles. So they're positioning themselves to make sure that they're ready to hit this head on.
Hearing about self-driving cars is not a new thing. It's been several years now that they've been in development and in testing and experimentation. Are we close to that kind of shift? I know we've seen it in electric vehicles a little bit. Like, give me a sense of looking at the long history of the automobile. Where are we?
So it's a funny thing because the technology is almost all there. The problem is that socially it's an issue, and also the infrastructure is an issue. So in order for autonomous vehicles to work, you got to set up the infrastructure to accommodate autonomous mobility and autonomous vehicles.
And by infrastructure, you mean like the whole city?
Everything. The city, the roads, the traffic lights, the street signs, everything needs to communicate with each other in order to get these autonomous vehicles to be on this grid. So it's really a grid, right? So anything from like a traffic cone that's been placed in a construction area can technically be connected, right? And even people using their smartphones crossing the street, that person can technically be connected to the grid, so the autonomous vehicle knows not to hit them. So the technology really is all there, but there are barriers in terms of implementing the infrastructure, figuring out what the standard's going to be, and ultimately who's going to pay for it, because that infrastructure comes at a cost, and it's either going to be governments and in conjunction to the private sector to make that happen.
How close are we to that shift when this will be something that governments, municipalities take into account when designing cities? And when will we hit that shift where it's actually something that GM and other companies are building instead of researching and working on?
Well, it depends who you ask. If you ask companies like GM and other companies that are really head on in autonomy, they'll tell you the future is now and the future is coming. I'm a bit more skeptical. I think there are more practical barriers to seeing autonomy being a thing. Again, we talked about infrastructure. There's also the social acceptance of it in terms of people being ready for it. But the other practical barrier is the fleet. So if you look at the vehicles that are on the road today, gas and non-autonomous vehicles, they're lasting a long time. So it's no longer like a 5 years. Some vehicles are lasting 10, right, 20 years. And they're still selling vehicles. So the vehicles that are being sold right now will likely be on the road for 20 years. And these vehicles that are being driven by you and me are going to be need to communicate with these autonomous vehicles. And that hasn't been figured out. So I think we're at least a couple of generations away from seeing autonomous vehicles on the road as in not being an exception rather than a rule.
Which, my next question now sounds maybe obvious, but does that mean that the reasons given for yesterday's announcement, is that disingenuous?
Yeah, I don't think it's disingenuous. I mean, this is all part of a strategy to make the overall operations more efficient. They're still going to be making cars in other cities. Even here in Ontario, there's a Cami plant that makes the Chevrolet Equinox, which is a regular SUV. It's pretty run-of-the-mill. It's actually a nice product, but it's a very widely circulated product, and lots of people are buying it. So they're still making cars, and they're right, still going to be focusing on this. But this is also a question of freeing up capital and freeing up bandwidth to make sure that they can focus on the next generation of mobility, which will be autonomous and in the shorter term, electrification or even alternative propulsion, so hydrogen and all that kind of stuff.
Up next.
And the next generation, as you probably know, is so driven by technology mm-hmm. and connectivity that if that's not sort of baked into these vehicles and if they're not on top of the next best thing in technology, these vehicles become irrelevant.
We all have investment goals, and Scotia iTrade can help you reach yours. Access free tools and resources to sharpen your investment skills. Visit ScotiaiTrade.com to start direct investing today. Scotia iTrade, there's a trader in all of us.
Why do you think, given that, like you mentioned before, the Oshawa plant's kind of one of the smaller ones in Canada, and not to diminish, you know, almost 3,000 people losing their jobs, but if it's that small, why do you think it had such an outsized impact in terms of the news coverage? Yeah. I mean, this has been a day spent talking about cars and what they mean to the places that make them, and where we go from here, and should the government step in? I believe there's a question of somebody, should we nationalize GM? But these are things that are being talked about, and it seems like there's a relationship here that's bigger than the numbers on the paper.
Well, it's symbolism again. I mean, GM has been involved in Oshawa for the last 100 years to some degree. So the symbolism of GM being sort of part of the fabric of the city plays a big part of it. These are also very high paying jobs and with tenured employees. So losing that makes a big impact. But we got to keep it in perspective. It is a small operation that made a big impact in the news, but we're forgetting that when you look at other areas in the or other manufacturers in Ontario, like Toyota, for instance, which employs 8,000 people in Cambridge and Woodstock, they're expanding and they're adding lines and they're basically adding vehicles there, and they're actually building the vehicles of the future there too. They're building hybrids there, and they're building models that sell. Same thing with Oakville, with Ford. They employs about 4,600 people, and they're building small SUVs that are really hitting the market at the right time. Even Chrysler, which has been beleaguered for the last little while, has 6,100 employees in Windsor building the Chrysler Pacifica and the Grand Caravan, which is still a very popular model and still has some market appeal. Honda is another example. 4,600 employees in Alliston building the Honda Civic, which generally is the hottest selling car in the country, and also the CR-V, which is again an SUV, which has great sales numbers. So, automotive manufacturing is still alive and well in Ontario. It may not be in Oshawa, but generally, when you look at it across Ontario, it's still a very robust and contributing industry.
What kind of options does the government have now, aside from just retraining those workers and hoping for the best?
Yeah, I mean, even when you saw the government reaction, and even later, it was all about focusing on retraining the workers rather than talking to GM and trying to get them to change their mind. The government knew in advance that this was part of a larger global change for GM, so I'm sure they knew that trying to change their mind in this instance would be futile. If you look at history, when there's been threats of closing plants, the government has intervened and they've given generous tax breaks and generous incentives for these manufacturers to continue to manufacture in this province. GM in 2016 was going to pull out of Oshawa, and basically they struck a new deal with the government and with the union and continued on for another 2 years. But I think this time it's very different. There's been a sea change in the outlook for this industry. It's become much more of a technology-based industry rather than an assembly-based industry. So that's why I think this decision is probably final.
So what does a car look like in 2028 then? What sells a car to people 10 years from now?
Well, like I said, technology is the big driver. So, it came in the past, differentiators between vehicles would have been reliability, quality, performance, and all that kind of stuff. And that's no longer an issue. The quality gap between manufacturers, whether you're a Hyundai or a Toyota or a GM, is so minimal that it doesn't count anymore. So whether you're buying a Honda or a GM product, they're all pretty much as reliable as the next vehicle. The difference now is in technology. How much technology can you pack into the vehicle? How can you make that technology relevant to younger buyers like yourself?
Thank you.
There you go. Yeah. And that's the real driver, because one of the biggest issues with the automotive manufacturers is how do you make the car buying or buying a car appealing to younger audiences or to the next generation? And the next generation, as you probably know, is so driven by technology, mm-hmm, and connectivity that if that's not sort of baked into these vehicles and if they're not on top of the next best thing in technology, these vehicles become irrelevant.
Give me some examples of how they bake that stuff in and what they're possibly going to do in the future.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at some examples now, right? So when you look at things like smartphone connectivity, like Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, most vehicles are coming equipped with that now. The vehicles that aren't are the ones that are being passed over. So these are examples of technology today that's absolutely required in these vehicles in order to make them relevant to buyers. In the future, I think, connectivity is going to play a big part of it. Autonomy is going to play a big part of it. Safety is also going to be a major aspect of this. So these are where we're probably going to be seeing more and more of the development being focused in terms of being able to get us to our destination as fast as possible in the most autonomous way and in the most safest way.
What will that mean for the people who make these cars? Will the balance of those jobs change?
Probably. I think the technology, again, the people that are putting the intellectual brain power behind developing the technology are the ones that are going to come on top. I think when you look at the manufacturing process, it's already becoming very automated, even in plant with robotics and the like. And I think we're going to see more and more and more of that in terms of assembly becoming far more easy. And think about this. The one thing that people don't really think about much is when you look at electric vehicles are actually simple machines. They're much more simple than a gas-powered engine. There's less moving parts. There's probably a little bit more on the electronic side, but there's less stuff that goes into manufacturing an electric vehicle than there is into a regular gas-powered vehicle. Less parts, just less moving stuff. So it's in the long run, it's technically cheaper to maintain. And in the long run, once they get up to producing at scale to meet market demand, it'll probably actually be cheaper for them to manufacture these vehicles.
What does that mean for Southern Ontario and the other plants that are still open now?
Well, like I said before, I think a lot of the, in terms of the current examples, a lot of the manufacturers are already starting to leave the manufacturing space or focusing and reinvesting in this province in the technology space. And we got that with GM. The other part of this is if you look at the guys that still, or the manufacturers that still have a large manufacturing footprint in this province. We mentioned Toyota before and Ford and Oakville and even Honda. They're focusing on bringing in models that they know are selling and they know are being driven by technology. It should be noted that when you look at Toyota's plant in Cambridge and Woodstock, it's the only plant outside of Japan that actually produces hybrids. We do have the know-how here to build, and we do have the know-how to build quality. So really the focus should be on bringing the right models for the right markets at the right time and also focusing on the next-gen technology.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Tim Demopoulos, automotive specialist. That was the big story brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. And for more from us, you can visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. Lots of episodes there for you to check out, as well as your opportunity to submit your own idea, which you can also do on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And of course, you can find us everywhere you get podcasts. And when you do, wherever that happens to be, please hit us with a rating and a review. We'd love to know what you actually think. And of course, if you have a friend who isn't listening yet, tell them to listen. Thanks for your time. I'm Jordan Heath-Rellings. We'll talk tomorrow.